This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
We just need a strategy, okay?
Okay, here's the plan.
The Senate has hearings with Facebook CEO and founder CEO and founder Mark Zuckerberg to determine if there were any laws broken and what should be done about it. We go there now on Tactics. Good morning. Welcome into Tactics. You are listening to News Radio 1440 and News Radio 1440.com. 860-1440. That is the way to get in touch with us. You can also tweet us on Tactics, and you can message us on Facebook if you want to. You can get into the show that way as well. Although, I don't know, they might try to cut me off after going through this next couple segments. I might say some things they don't like, but that is what's going on right now, and that's something that I do think people are underestimating the story's importance. Because it's one thing for media outlets to have an obvious and profound bias. Of course, that's bad. Not something that we want. But part of the reason that I think it's even more dangerous to have these social network outlets and places like search engines, for example, like Google, or social network outlets like Facebook and Twitter, the reason that is, I think, even more problematic to have some obvious bias in them is that there are a lot of people that, A, believe that they're more objective, and B, the information you're getting is not coming directly from them. And the reason that I do think that that is an issue is because the content originates not from them, but from the users. And so because of that, if you're seeing the same story over and over again pop up in your newsfeed and there's 10, 12 people that shared it, and it's something that the reason that you're seeing it so often is because Facebook promoted it, as opposed to something that was just got a lot of reach naturally by different people seeing it and sharing it. And if there are certain news sources and certain sites and certain opinions that they try to tamp down and keep those things from going viral, keep them from reaching more people, which they have, and we saw at least a 14% drop after they started the new algorithm in conservative news outlets and their web traffic. Because Facebook now is basically a gateway. Back in the day, we used to, if you were going to look for news on the internet, what you did was you went to the individual news sites. So you typed in CNN.com or WSFA.com or whatever it was, where Fox News, any news source that you wanted to go to, you went directly to their site. People don't do that anymore. They don't really go to the sites very much. In fact, I'll be honest, it's been a while since I've been to any of the major news networks, maybe with the exception of CNN, because I usually try to keep an eye on them since they're our news partner, but I usually don't even see the homepages myself. I usually see the different stories on social media, usually through Twitter or Facebook, and I wind up reading my news and getting my news that way. Well, the problem with that is that if that's the only place where you're getting a lot of your news, yeah, the content isn't actually produced by Facebook and Twitter, but if they're controlling which stories get moved around a lot and which ones don't, that's obviously problematic. And if there are certain opinions that they want to tamp down, and if you think that this is just something that is dealing with people like terrorists and so on and so forth, keep in mind, you have guys like Steven Crowder, who just posted a comedy video, just a goofy late-night sketch, about a computer going to a transgender convention trying to identify himself as a computer as opposed to a person. And that was the whole bit. The guy's dressed up in like a big tinfoil suit and he's trying to identify himself as a computer. And even the people in the transgender convention, the transgender people there, laughed and thought it was funny. But apparently this was so incredibly offensive to the people running the social media, the godfathers of the social media platforms. They took him off of Twitter. They demonetized him on YouTube. They banned him for a couple weeks. And so just for having a differing opinion, they label it hate speech and then slap you around for it. And I'll say this too. This is something that I have dealt with personally. People do not think of Facebook in this way, but they really do censor some of the stuff. I've had some of my stuff censored before, not often. Usually I have a pretty good record of whatever I post winds up getting out, but I remember there was one thing that I posted. It was about two paragraphs. I mean, it wasn't very long, but it was me going off on a tangent about homosexual marriage. And of course, being a minister myself, believing the way that the Bible teaches that marriage is supposed to be a man and a woman, I was pretty harsh on the practice of homosexuality, talking about it being a sin and really just quoting scripture, in some cases directly, in this statement. And I saw that all of a sudden, for no apparent reason, my post disappeared. And I had to dig through Facebook to find out exactly what had happened. And when I did find out, they said it was flagged as hate speech and taken down, but they never gave me an explanation. They never said which statement in that comment specifically was hate speech. They just basically said, no, you can't get it back and you can't post it again. And so these are things that really should concern us, because the idea and the perception by the average person is that Facebook is just a medium, and that's exactly what Facebook should be. However, they have taken to manipulating and sorting through and deciding what stories should and should not be publicized. So here's really the big idea, the big takeaway from this. Should Facebook just be a neutral medium, or should there be multiple platforms? Because I don't think that we can have one. We have to either have one or the other. Either Facebook winds up doing what it claimed to do, and by that I mean they start cleaning up their act and actually being neutral and actually being a free-for-all like they should be, or they just say, you know what, we are biased, we happen to lean left, if you don't like it, find another source, and then somebody starts a conservative version of Facebook. I don't know if it would be nearly as popular, I really don't, but the point is, I do not see a scenario where one of these two things does not happen. Either Facebook can be neutral and can be a space for everybody, or what we're going to do is we're just going to have multiple platforms and you just go on whichever social network platform fits your ideas best. And I think that is problematic if that's the route we go, because that gives us one less place to exchange ideas with people we disagree with. And so that is, I think, very problematic, and it will even further the idea of us living in a bubble and only seeing the news and seeing the opinions that agree with us. Now, we know with cable news how that worked out, that there's essentially cable news wars going on constantly, because, I mean, that's how the media works. That would be true whether or not there was any bias, because they are all competitors. But nonetheless, what you see is CNN and Fox at odds with each other. They'll take pot shots at one another. You'll see the same thing between Fox and MSNBC. And so basically, if you have one political philosophy, you go to one source, and for the average person, not saying everybody, probably a lot of the people that listen to me and my audience do go to multiple news sources, but for the average person, if they watch the news at all, and that's not a majority of the country, but if they watch the news, they typically go to whichever source agrees with them more and confirms more of what they believe. So if you were an avid Trump voter, you probably watch Fox News. If you were somebody that voted for Clinton, you probably go to CNN or MSNBC. And so because of that, we've lost even that common space, and we've gotten to the point to where we seclude ourselves in our own little bubble of confirmation bias. And the fact that there are different networks that support different beliefs and have different sets of biases, that's really led to that. And I think that the same thing could happen with social media if this is not looked at. Now, even if Facebook actually decides to remain neutral, or decides to make an effort to become neutral would be a better way to state it. Even if they do that, even if that is what takes place, there is going to be some level of us living in our own little bubble. That's how the algorithm works. It tends to show us more of things that we happen to like, And because of that, it's going to send us things that we liked, that we commented on. And typically we like and comment on things that that confirm what we already believed. And so social media, even if it does stay completely neutral, can still drive us into this bubble. So this is something that's really serious. It really does affect our political discourse. And I do think that it's a conversation worth having. What do you think about this? Do you think that social network has been a net gain, a net loss? Do you think that we're better off or worse off? And, you know, is this something that really has contributed to the political state and the state of political conversation in our country? Love to hear your opinions on that. 860-1440, and we will be right back.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
I give and bequeath my soul to Almighty God that gave it me, hoping that through the meritorious death and passion of our Savior and Redeemer, Jesus Christ, to receive absolution and remission for all my sins. Governor George Mason, Father of the Bill of Rights.
Welcome back. You are listening to Tactics on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com. 860-1440, that's the phone number. If you want to call and get in touch with me, you can also tweet me at Tactics Radio. We read the tweets on there whenever we get a chance. And speaking of callers, let's go ahead and go to the phones right now. Let's go to Dennis. Good morning.
Good morning, Caleb.
Yes, sir. What's on your mind?
Yo, what you was asking for opinions on what now?
Essentially, where do you stand on this whole Facebook thing? Is it something that you think has been a positive, a negative? Do you think that Facebook should be a neutral platform, or should they have certain biases and filter certain things out?
Well, I do think they should filter out nudity, pornography, and things of that nature.
Fair enough.
Some of these, what they used to call, back when I was a child, snuff films. But you see people actually get murdered in video. I think those should be taken away. However, to me, Facebook has been a great pathway to reach others, to share the truth with them and a lot of knowledge and wisdom of the Lord. But I've noticed with, like, talk radio and things of that nature, that Facebook has its section where, you know, people will post something and say, chime in or give me your opinion on this and that. I just think, I don't use social media or anything in life at all for opinions. I try to deal with the truth, but I know that that's what draws in the people and the money and the conversation is opinions. But to me, opinions are not of God, Christ, or the Holy Ghost, but you know,
do you think that, because you've actually mentioned a couple things that you think has been negative and positive, do you think it's been a net good, or do you think it really is just a mix? Is it a net good, a net bad, or would you say it's somewhere in the middle?
Well, for me, it's been 95% good.
Okay,
because
good.
Again, when you spread the love of Christ, that love, which is of Christ, that leads people to Christ. And, you know, that's what my main goal is. So, but again, like I was saying, I noticed that the high majority of people just don't want the truth. They just want to, it seems like they're lonely. They just want to talk and give opinions back and forth, but they don't want to deal with the truth. That's
now,
not it.
Well, thank you very much, Dennis. I appreciate that. I thought that was very insightful. And I will say this, I think that Dennis is on to something right there. There is a profound difference, and I think that there's a lot of biblical narrative to back this up. There is a big difference in productive conversation and noise. And in fact, this is actually drawing back to some commentary on the Bible that I'm drawing from C.S. Lewis in his novel, The Screwtape Letters. One of the things that he brought up is silence can be divine, and laughter and truth can be divine. But noise is never divine. And so the demons will seek to tempt you through the creation of noise. And I think that's really where a lot of the problems on social media do come from, is that so much of social media, so much of what you're seeing, and I think Dennis was right to point this out, is noise. A lot of it is not productive. A lot of it is idle chatter, which is something that is condemned in the scripture. And so, especially when you're getting into things like gossip and trying to I guess peer into people's personal lives a little too much, which again, part of the the reverse of that is they shouldn't be putting that much information on there anyway if they didn't want people to pry, and I understand that. But I do think that there's an awful lot of idle chatter that comes not just from Facebook, but from the social media as a whole. And I do think that at the end of the day, when you're looking at the issue in its totality, there have been some really, I think, very detrimental things that have happened to society, and a big contributing factor to that has been social media. But a lot of it has more to do with how we use social media, more so than the medium itself. And so a lot of people, I think, look at Facebook, and I think there is some merit to this, as being amoral, neither good nor bad, just kind of something that is. And it's based upon how someone uses it. Now, I think it ceases to be that when it starts having some of the biases that we've seen recently, where it starts trying to pick winners and losers when it comes to news, and pick some news sources that it likes and some that it doesn't, and suppress the ones that it doesn't and prop up the stories that it likes. I think that it becomes more detrimental and more nefarious when it does that. And there are some things that just the nature of the medium lean towards that causes problems as well. And that's true of any medium. There are shortcomings to TV. There are shortcomings to radio, so on and so forth. There are shortcomings to the newspaper. And so you do have to keep that in mind and weigh the good against the bad. But I think that especially when that bias starts coming out, that's really where you start having problems. Now, there was a pretty funny moment the other day when they were questioning Zuckerberg, and Dick Durbin, a Democrat senator, asked him to share what hotel he was staying at that night, and if it would be okay if he would provide a record of the people that he's messaged in the last week. And of course, Zuckerberg, he kind of smiled because I think he realized where this was going. And the people behind him, the people that were on his team, kind of giggled a little bit at this too. And it is a good point, though. But I think that Dick Durbin's point was less about the medium of Facebook itself and more the people who are using Facebook. Because one thing that I've noticed, and I think, and I'm not trying to pick on older people, I'm just saying that I've noticed that this happens to be a little bit more common with older people. It happens with younger people too, but I think it's more common with older people. They tend to not realize that Facebook is a public medium. And I think because it's something that happens in your home, that you're sitting there in your house by yourself with a laptop, and you post something, you post your opinion on something, they don't realize that that stuff is public. You might as well be standing on a street corner in the middle of rush hour with a bullhorn shouting it out for anybody to hear. And so there's this illusion that Facebook is supposed to be private, but Facebook is a public medium, and that's something that we need to realize. I've actually experienced this with family members, with friends, that they'll post a political opinion or they'll post something that's just flat out wrong, and I'll correct them on it, not being vitriolic or anything, but just saying, hey, this is actually not right. And they'll get really mad at me. How dare you comment on my wall? And I'm like, you do realize this is a public forum. Like, if you didn't want to discuss an issue, you shouldn't have posted about it. And so I do think a lot of people have a hard time realizing just because you post on Facebook from your house does not mean it is a private forum. It's definitely out in the open. Take it, Rush.
Tactics with Caleb Colquitt. Every weekday from 9 to 11. Only on News Radio 1440 and newsradio1440.com.
Hebrews 8:10. For this is the covenant that I will make with the house of Israel. After those days, says the Lord, I will put my laws into their minds, and I will write them on their hearts, and I will be their God, and they shall be my people.
Welcome back. You are listening to Tactics on News Radio 1440 and newsradio1440.com. 860-1440. That is the way to get in touch with me if you are inclined to do so. You can also tweet me at Tactics Radio. And I did want to go ahead and go to this because there were some really interesting and I think very telling moments during the Senate hearing the other day. We were talking about this right before the break with Facebook and everything that was going on there. I thought one of the few moments in there, Dick Durbin's moment was entertaining, but it wasn't necessarily all that fruitful. And so one of the few times that I actually thought that there was something productive going on was when they were talking to Senator Ted Cruz when he was offering his questions. And one of the reasons that I thought that this really set his apart, everybody else is basically just asking what Facebook should do and, about the privacy. And those are not unimportant questions. But the reason that Ted Cruz's I thought was far more significant is because, like a lawyer that has argued several cases before the Supreme Court, he thinks of it in legal terms, and he's asking questions specifically about some of the legal ramifications that would come Facebook's way by not being an unbiased source like they claim to be. So let's go ahead and listen to some of the questions he was asking about and try to unpack some of this.
Mr. Zuckerberg, does Facebook consider itself a neutral public forum?
Senator, we consider ourselves to be a platform for all ideas.
Let me ask the question again. Does Facebook consider itself to be a neutral public forum? And representatives of your company have given conflicting answers on this. Are you a First Amendment speaker expressing your views, or are you a neutral public forum allowing everyone to speak?
Senator, here's how we think about this. I don't believe that there is certain content that clearly we do not allow, right? Hate speech, terrorist content, nudity, anything that makes people feel unsafe in the community. From that perspective, that's why we generally try to refer to what we do as a platform for all ideas.
Let me try, just because the time is constrained. It's just a simple question. The predicate for Section 230 immunity under the CDA is that you are a neutral public forum. Do you consider yourself a neutral public forum, or are you engaged in political speech, which is your right under the First Amendment?
Well, Senator, our goal is certainly not to engage in political speech. I'm not that familiar with the specific legal language of the law that you speak to, so I would need to follow up with you on that. I'm just trying to lay out how broadly I think about this.
Okay, so a couple things to mention here, and this is why this is important, and Ted Cruz gets right at the heart of the matter like he usually does, talking about the specific way that Facebook is qualified as a corporation. You see, they get a tax break. Facebook gets a tax exemption for being a, quote, neutral public forum, and that is the standard that is presented in the legalese, as it were, to state this is the standard that you have to meet to get this level of tax exemption, to get this to get qualified as this program under the law. And so that's really important because they pay less taxes and they are subject to less scrutiny because they are not a First Amendment speaker, as Ted Cruz points out, and he points out quite succinctly that if Zuckerberg wants his corporation to engage in political speech, they are welcome to do so. There is absolutely nothing preventing them from doing so. They could say tomorrow, you know what, we're super left-leaning. That's who we are as a company. So we're just going to start censoring out any voices that we don't like. They could do that, and it would be perfectly legal. They have a First Amendment right just like everybody else. And Ted Cruz is wise to point that out. However, if you're going to be receiving this certain classification, you have to meet a certain standard, and that standard is that you're supposed to be a neutral public forum. And he's saying that there are some concerns at this, and he asked the question three or four times. Zuckerberg never does actually answer it, because I think because Zuckerberg is a very smart guy. There's a reason that he's as rich as he is. He's a sharp guy. And because of that, he recognizes and understands that it is unwise for him to paint himself into a corner and say, yes, we're actually a neutral public forum. But Ted Cruz is saying, well, you're getting the benefits of calling yourself a neutral public forum, and yet you're not willing to say that you are. Your company is a neutral public forum here in the Senate under oath, which is very telling of Zuckerberg and really all that's going on here. So let's go ahead and listen. He continues on in another wave of questioning. This is, again, Ted Cruz talking to Facebook CEO Mike Zuckerberg.
Well, Mr. Zuckerberg, I will say there are a great many Americans who I think are deeply concerned that Facebook and other tech companies are engaged in a pervasive pattern of bias and political censorship. There have been numerous instances with Facebook. In May of 2016, Gizmodo reported that Facebook had purposely and routinely suppressed conservative stories from trending news, including stories about CPAC, including stories about Mitt Romney, including stories about the Lois Lerner IRS scandal, including stories about Glenn Beck. In addition to that, Facebook has initially shut down the Chick-fil-A Appreciation Day page, has blocked a post of a Fox News reporter, has blocked over two dozen Catholic pages, and most recently blocked Trump supporters Diamond and Silk's page with 1.2 million Facebook followers after determining their content and brand were, quote, unsafe to the community. To a great many Americans, that appears to be a pervasive pattern of political bias. Do you agree with that assessment?
Senator, let me say a few things about this. First, I understand where that concern is coming from because Facebook and the tech industry are located in Silicon Valley, which is an extremely left-leaning place. And this is actually a concern that I have and that I try to root out at the company, is making sure that we don't have any bias in the work that we do. And I think it is a fair concern that that people would wonder about.
Let me ask this.
Real quick before Ted Cruz continues on here. This is the biggest nothing burger of an answer you've ever heard. Because Ted Cruz lays out several instances right here of a clear bias against right-leaning sources. And Zuckerberg basically says, well, let me talk about that. And then proceeds to not talk about that at all. And says, as a general rule, no, we're concerned with it. And this is something that concerns me. And I understand where that concern comes from, us being in Silicon Valley, which is a left-leaning place. No, the concern doesn't come from your physical location. The concern comes from the, about six stories that he just brought up, where Facebook showed an obvious bias against right-wing sources. And so he tries to stave off and basically say, well, that, you know, that's all just hearsay without actually just saying that, and tries to deflect. But he just laid out a pretty convincing case, and Zuckerberg has no idea what to do with it, so he just kind of tries to give a general generic statement to try to get himself out of this. But let's continue to listen on.
Now, are you aware of any ad or page that has been taken down from Planned Parenthood?
Senator, I'm not, but let me just...
How about moveon.org?
Sorry?
How about moveon.org?
I'm not specifically aware of those.
How about any Democratic candidate for office?
I'm not specifically aware. I mean, I'm not sure.
In your testimony, you say that you have 15 to 20,000 people working on security and content review. Do you know the political orientation of those 15 to 20,000 people engaged in content review?
No, Senator. We do not generally ask people about their political orientation when they're joining the company.
So as CEO, have you ever made hiring or firing decisions based on political positions or what candidates they supported?
No.
Why was Palmer Luckey fired?
That is a specific personnel matter that seems like it would be inappropriate to
speak
to.
You just made a specific representation that you didn't make decisions based on political views.
Well,
is that accurate?
I can commit that it was not because of a political view.
Whew. Well, getting a little hot under the collar there with Mark Zuckerberg. And here's where this all goes back to. He gives out and lays out a very clear case, a very clear anti-right sentiment. That there's all these occurrences where people on the right, whether you agree with them or not, because there were a couple people that he just mentioned in there that I don't even necessarily consider them quote unquote conservatives. But the fact that they were censored for having opinions that are not popular amongst leftists, and the fact that, like Ted Cruz just pointed out, there's no stories of MoveOn.org or Planned Parenthood or any of their stuff being brought down. You're not seeing that in the news. So there's a pretty clear pattern that Facebook is censoring speech that it believes is not correct. And this really goes back to one thing, I think. This is my analysis of it. That the left believes that there is only the objective mainstream. In other words, there's the regular people, the people in the mainstream, the people that are sane, and then there's just the crazy off-brand right. That's how they view the media. They think that MSNBC and CNN and a lot of them, a lot of the people on the left, that all of those stations, those are normal, those are mainstream, those are moderate stations. And the reason that they appear to the left, to some people, is because all they do is watch Fox News. And so you only have the mainstream, the normal, the people that are objective, the people that actually tell it like it is, and then the crazy off-right. To them, that's really how it works. And because of that, they can censor out stories that they believe are unfit for people to see. And in their own mind, that is something that generally everybody would agree with. in their own mind, that's how people think. And that's really why you're seeing this kind of thinking. I know because I've heard them talk about it like this. And so I think it may very well mean that this bias is unintended and they really don't see it. Honestly, there is an air of sincerity to what Zuckerberg is saying. I think that he genuinely believes that Facebook is completely unbiased and that were he to look at the details of these individual stories, there might be a couple that he disagreed with, but as a general rule, he doesn't see a problem with that because those are just crazy people on the right. And so because of that, they don't see that they have a bias, which is incredibly dangerous. And I do think that there is a level of innocence, though, because they really don't see it and don't understand that having the opinions of the left is, in and of itself, a form of bias. And like I said, I've had my post censored as hate speech for talking about homosexuality before. And then Ted Cruz specifically cites, which he asks, have you ever made any personnel decisions based on political leanings? And he says no. And he says, well, what about Palmer Luckey? And for those of you who are unaware, this was somebody who wound up giving about $10,000 to the Trump campaign. He's the founder of Oculus, and Facebook bought Oculus out several years ago. And I think that for about 3 years, Palmer Luckey was at Facebook. He was an employee, and like I said, they bought out his company, and so he was working there at Facebook. And when it was discovered that he gave about $10,000 to the Trump campaign, he was quickly let go. Now, this is not unheard of in Silicon Valley. There was an ousting of Mozilla Firefox's CEO, which, by the way, they're a nonprofit. The people that make the browsers, the Firefox browser, that's them. And so it is not a popular opinion to have any conservative or even right-leaning, not even necessarily conservative, but right-leaning ideas in Silicon Valley. It can cause you to lose your job. And that's what happened with Palmer Luckey. I don't know if Zuckerberg was personally involved in that, but it is, I think, no coincidence whatsoever that after it was discovered that he gave $10,000 to a super PAC that supported Trump, that he was suddenly let go of the job that he had had at Facebook for 3 years. And yet Zuckerberg is denying that there was any connection whatsoever to his political leanings. Now, maybe there was, maybe there wasn't. I tend to think that that's far too big a coincidence to, especially considering he had already been there for 3 years at that point, for that to have not been at least somewhat politically motivated. And I don't know if Zuckerberg made that decision personally or not, but his company did. And so there's a lot of reasons here to see that there is a very blatant anti-right skew when it comes to Facebook. And Ted Cruz finishes up and I think really hits the nail on the head and wraps it up in his last point. And we're going to talk about that in just a second.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
I recommend a general and public return of praise and thanksgiving to him from whose goodness these blessings descend. John Jay, First Supreme Court Chief Justice.
Welcome back, all. You are listening to Tactics on News Radio 1440. And newsradio1440.com, 860-1440. Those are the numbers. If you want to get in touch with me, you can also tweet me at Tactics Radio. And continuing on with what we've been talking about with Ted Cruz questioning Mark Zuckerberg, there is this final kind of closing statement that he gives where he asks a question. And I think he really hits the nail on the head and really the most important part of this entire process. And so we'll go ahead and play that now.
Do you know of those 15 to 20,000 people engaged in content review? How many, if any, have ever supported financially a Republican candidate for office?
Senator, I do not know that.
Your testimony says it is not enough that we just connect people. We have to make sure those connections are positive.
Listen to this.
It says we have to make sure people aren't using their voice to hurt people or spread misinformation. We have a responsibility not just to build tools, to make sure those tools are used for good. Mr. Zuckerberg, do you feel it's your responsibility to assess users whether they are good and positive connections or ones that those 15 to 20,000 people deem unacceptable or deplorable?
Senator, you're asking about me personally?
Facebook.
Senator, I think that there are a number of things that we would all agree are clearly bad. foreign interference in our elections, terrorism, self-harm.
I'm talking about censorship.
Well, I think that you would probably agree that we should remove terrorist propaganda from the service. So that, I agree, I think is clearly bad activity that we want to get down, and we're generally proud of how well we do at that.
Okay, so here's what we've got to sort through. Because what Cruz is asking is about, is censorship actually going on in the halls of Facebook's headquarters? And Zuckerberg kind of comes back with, well, there are certain things that I think that we would all agree are bad. But here's the problem with that. Who gets to decide what is good and bad? Because if somebody is deciding that, if somebody is sitting there making decisions based upon what is good or bad, humans, by their very nature, myself and everyone else included, have inherent biases. And so because of that, then you are engaging in censorship if you are deciding what is good or bad. And if you have a goal, which, by the way, is not a, I think, an immoral or nefarious goal, but you have to keep in mind, you can't say, well, it's our job to make sure communication is positive, but we're also a neutral public forum. You can't be both. You either are going through people's messages and deciding what is positive and what is not and trying to make the communication more positive, or at least what you deem as positive in your own opinion, or you aren't. You can't be both, and you can't be both at the same time. And that's really the problem that Facebook is faced with right now. And should Facebook be a public forum, a free-for-all for everybody, everybody's ideas, or should they choose speech?
Tactics with Caleb Colquitt, every weekday from 9 to 11, only on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com.
We just need a strategy, okay?
Okay, here's the plan.
It's Holocaust Remembrance Day. We go there now on Tactics. Welcome back. You are listening to Tactics on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com, 860-1440. Those are the numbers. If you want to get in touch with me, you can also tweet me at Tactics Radio. And I do have to get serious here for a moment because I just found this out not too long ago. Today is actually Holocaust Remembrance Day. And there's so many things surrounding the Holocaust, it's really hard to pin down one specific aspect of it, or to talk about just one part of it. But when you think about how a country, how they got to the point to where the majority, and not just a simple majority, but an overwhelming amount of the population in Germany, got to the point to where they were complacent, as 6 million people were systematically murdered. You wonder how they got to that point. And this is not an attempt to go after the German people or anything like that, but you do have to look at history and be honest about it. That when it came to not just the Jews, even though they were by far the biggest victims and they lost the most when it came to the Holocaust, you also look at, you had Roma, homosexuals, communist, capitalist, really any kind of political enemy of the Nazis. And another victim that you don't hear very often, that quite frankly revisionist historians have tried to sweep under the rug or try to chalk it up to something else. You know who else was in the concentration camps right there alongside the Jewish people and the other groups that I just named? Bible scholars. That sounds odd, but if you think about it, it makes a lot of sense. Because right alongside with Karl Marx's 10 Pillars of Communism, one of the things that he recommended, and keep in mind that Karl Marx was one of Hitler's personal heroes. He wrote about that many times in his life. That anybody that was viewed as the enemy of the Nazis had to have their property seized and had to be taken care of. And that's exactly what happened in the Holocaust. And that's why, alongside political rivals and the Jewish people and other outcasts and other people that were not pure enough genetically, you also had Bible scholars. Because they were a threat to the Nazis. You could argue even that they were the greatest threat to the Nazis. And why was that? Because if you read the teachings of Jesus Christ, if you read the epistles and the wisdom contained within them, and you look at the gospel and what it preaches about loving your neighbor, having compassion for one another, treating each other well, and especially in a lot of Paul's epistles, and by example in the Gospels, the way that the people who were men of God, that they looked at each other as God's children, all of them. It's easy to understand why that was a threat to the Nazi message. That in a nation that was obsessed with trying to divide people, trying to drive them apart, and trying to make the case, by the way, largely based upon the theory of evolution and Darwinism, that there were certain races that were superior to others, and that because of that, there are certain races that ought to rule over others and make other races subservient to them because that's their rightful place. You can see how the message of the gospel, the teachings of Christ and the people that followed him, completely debunk that. And if you believe in God and if you believe in the Bible, you believe in the things that it teaches, then you will not believe those two. Those are two irreconcilable differences between the two ideologies, and they should be. Because if you're reading the scripture, it doesn't take very long to figure out, well, God created all of us. God cares about all of us. God's concerned with all of us. So it makes no sense for me to hate someone or look down on them because genetically they don't share a lot of DNA with me. You see, when stacked up against the teachings of the Bible, that mentality, those teachings, look silly. And really, Nazism is one brand of a larger evil. And I could say this with several different ideas. Materialism comes to mind for one. But I think perhaps the most dangerous one is collectivism. The idea that you don't get to be an individual. The idea that you just belong to a group, and so you don't get to have individual thoughts, you don't get to have individual ideas. You are part of your group, and you can never either rise above or fall below that group, that you are not a person, you're not, you know, whatever your name is, you are a Jewish man, or you're a black man, or you're a white man, or you're an Aryan man, whatever it may be. This idea that your race determines who you are, and that the Nazis had to look at people as groups and not individuals, that flies in the face of everything that the Bible teaches. That we are individuals, that God created each and every one of us, and that he makes all of us with a purpose. Because if you believe that God created people, there's no reason to believe that everyone does not have a purpose or that everyone is not valuable to him. Because you don't create something if you don't want it to exist. You don't create something if you don't believe it to be valuable. And so it's very easy to understand why the Nazis felt like the greatest threat to their regime, to their power, to their being able to take over the world, were Bible scholars, people who knew the Word of God. And eventually, even though it took longer than it probably should have. Eventually, that did become their downfall. That the horrors, and I do mean horrors, they're not words in the English language to describe what happened at the Holocaust. And by the way, I say this in large part from some of my experiences going to D.C. and talking to Holocaust survivors and getting to go to the Smithsonian, the Holocaust Museum up there. If you have not gotten a chance to do that, if you ever happen to be anywhere near our nation's capital, I cannot recommend that enough. And it is hard to see. It is hard to go through and look at some of the things that were committed, some of the things that were done against people. And you think about how only people that had truly lost their way, had truly rejected the love of God, and had truly cast away their own soul, could be engaged in such activity. It makes you aware of that. It makes you understand how evil really works and that it is real in this world, that it can blind men to their better judgment. It can turn us into animals and savages. It's a sobering reminder of how delicate we are. It is a sobering reminder of how easy it is for us to fall prey to our basest instincts. Really, the best way to describe it is a world that looks like God isn't there. But luckily, he was. And that time came to a close. And thank God that it did. But really, the message should be, and I think what Holocaust Remembrance Day should be about, and the message that we should take away from it, is that this should never have happened. And thus, we should do everything we can to make sure it doesn't happen again. I hate to say this, but the way we're acting now, the way that we're not learning our history, the way that we ignore evil and because we don't like something, we turn away from it. And most importantly, and I think the thing that we have most in common with the people of Germany in that time era, is the way that we are undervaluing human life. Whether it's abortion or assisted suicide or whatever else it may be, the way that we look at human life so callously that we're now going after, I mean, for goodness sake, kids with Down syndrome. That's exactly how it started with the Nazis. The first people they went after were the elderly and the disabled. Primarily children. I see too many similarities. And if we don't know our history, if we don't learn that, then the phrase never again doesn't mean anything. Because you have to know what you're trying to prevent in order to prevent it. I'm afraid we're not doing a great job of that. So on this day, it is set to remember the Holocaust and what went on there. I pray that it would motivate us to take a really hard, long look at the direction we're heading as a country and as a people and make sure that we live out the message of never again.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
Philippians 3:20. For our citizenship is in heaven, from which also we eagerly wait for a Savior, the Lord Jesus Christ.
Welcome back. You are listening to Tactics on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com. 860-1440. Those are the numbers. If you want to call, you can also tweet me at Tactics Radio. That is always an option. And guys, it is Thursday, and you know what that means. It is time for Upon Further Review.
After review, we're winning on the field.
If you can talk sports, you can talk with any guy in the world.
When sports and politics meet, it deserves a second look.
After further review, the player disqualification is reversed.
Here with the ruling, it's Caleb Colquitt and Sports Radio 740's Joe Hunk with
upon further review.
Happy Thursday, Joe.
I never thought I was going to say this, but Twitter needs to allow you to tweet out with more letters and characters.
Oh, I've been saying that for a long time.
I am over my limit by 25 characters, and I'm trying to post on our Twitter feed about how we're going to be out at Mellow Mushroom starting at 2 o'clock today for our broadcast to give out Auburn Mississippi State tickets and Auburn UAB tickets. And I am 25 over, now I'm 23 over, and I've got to delete 23 characters.
Well, you know, normally with work stuff, especially if it's promotional stuff, I try to help out if I can, but I am no help with that. Brevity is not my strong suit.
No, it's okay. It's basically saying I know what the English language is, and I have to butcher it to get my point across. That's what Twitter has.
Well, that's what Twitter is.
That's what
really.
Twitter is.
But I wanted to talk to you about this, and we didn't even plan this, but it is funny that you're wearing a Red Sox hat since this is our top story. Oh, I love the Red Sox.
This is my second Red Sox hat. I've got two. My wife bought this one because my other one is, let's just say, well-worn. It has a lot of miles on it.
I've actually been thinking about getting a new Red Sox hat because mine also is well-worn, and I was thinking about maybe getting one, see what the All-Star looks, because they always have sort of an American theme with that. So I was thinking about seeing what they'll do this year with the All-Star hats.
The problem with the old hat, and this is what I'm running into, and if you follow me on Twitter, at Joe Hunk, you saw me that I tweeted out the schedule for the Boston Celtics and their opening series with the Bucks. My wife and I are flying up to Boston on the 28th. This is the reason why we got married when we did. We got married on April 29th last year. And so our anniversary is always going to be a trip. We're always going to try to take a trip to places. And so this year she wanted to go. Let me emphasize this. My wife wants to go to Boston to go to Fenway Park.
You got a good woman there,
Jim. Let me rewind this. This is why I married her. Because she was the one that wanted. She originally, her plan, and let me emphasize, her plan was to go to Boston and go to Fenway, and then she also wanted to hop on a train and go to Yankee Stadium. So this, again, this is why I love my wife. But we found out that, wait a second, both the Celtics and the Bruins are going to be in the playoffs around that time. So there's a chance that we could see some playoff hockey or playoff basketball. The schedule for the NBA playoffs just came out last night because it was finalized, because yesterday was the last day of the regular season. The day we fly in, which we're going to be getting there around like 11 a.m.,
sure,
would be game 7 of the first round for the Celtics if that game goes that far. So now we got to figure out if I'm sitting here going, God, I don't want it to go 7 games, but I kind of want it to go 7 games now.
Because you want to be there for game 7.
Yeah. So that's the way this trip is working. But in that trip, I want to take the old Red Sox hat, because the last time I went to Boston was 2007, and I wore that hat. Now, in that time, that hat has been used quite a bit.
I
still want to rock the hat because it's already made one trip to Fenway. She'll make me take this one, but I'm also going to take the other one so I can wear it to a Red Sox game.
So does she not like you to wear the old hat?
Oh, no, she hates it. She thinks it stinks.
Yeah.
Which actually it kind of does.
I was about to say, she's probably right on that.
And there's a whole other set of problems about the Red Sox game we're going to go to as well.
Yeah, but speaking of Fenway, there was a lot of action
last night, man.
The other day with Fenway. So the Yankees, just for those of you who may not have caught it or may not know what we're talking about, the Sox did win up winning. They wound up winning 14-1, so it was a blowout. It's not like this was a close game.
No. Yeah, that was 2 nights ago. Yeah, that was last night. Yeah, that was a big, big, massive, butt kicking.
The Red Sox are killing it.
JD,
right now.
I think last night JD Martinez had a grand slam to try to get them back into it. I mean, the past two games have been so much fun for Yankees Red Sox.
It really has been. But here's one thing that was catching the headlines, and the reason we're talking about it. It looks like there was a dirty slide by Tyler Austin. Yeah, I know. I thought it was a dirty slide, too. It was pretty obvious. Anyway, spikes up right into the calf of the shortstop, Brock Holt.
Right.
And so,
who is the replacement, because their starting shortstop is injured right now, and he's on the 10-day DL.
Right. Yeah. And so there are already high tensions because they don't want to get their shortstop injured, especially when he's already the backup.
Yes.
And so take some spikes to the calf. He wasn't hurt, but it was very clearly, and it looked intentional, a dirty slide. So the next time he's up at bat, Joe Kelly.
Right in the back, man.
98-mile-per-hour fastball right in the back.
I mean, right in the back.
He slams the bat down on the plate, charges the mound, and a fight ensues.
You look, and he knew that was going to happen.
Oh yeah, he knew it was going to happen. He was ready for it.
I almost guarantee you, when he went up on deck, before he went up on deck, he looked at everybody and he said, "If they hit me, I'm charging."
Yep.
If they hit me, I'm charging.
That decision was made before. I agree.
Yeah, absolutely. And if they hit me, I'm charging.
But now I'll say this though: Joe Kelly is a bad man
for throwing a 98 Hummer just straight into him, or what?
No, for what happened afterward when he charged the mine, he slammed that guy down into the dirt face
first. Well, it's not like he's a small guy. Joe Kelly's a beast.
Well, I know, but it kind of reminded me, and I'm sure you remember this. You remember back in the day where you had Robin Ventura charge the mound with Nolan Ryan. And Nolan Ryan just puts him into a headlock and starts beating the mess out of him.
I was just happy he actually got to him and Joe Kelly didn't back away. That's part of it. And that's the part with this rivalry and being in that position. He knew he was going to get hit. He absolutely knew he was going to get hit. I remember one time I hit a home run, and I'll never forget. I hit a home run, and I didn't do this intentionally. But when I hit it, it was right down the third base line. So I'm standing at home plate watching it because I was making sure that it was going to stay fair. Well, then as I started going, I was like, oh, that's going to be fair. So I dropped the bat and I started trotting because I knew it was a home run. And when I got back to home plate and I tapped onto home plate, the batter that was walking up said, "Oh my God, you pimped that so much." And I went, "Oh wait, did I? I'm serious. Are you serious?" He goes, "Yeah, you kind of did." And I looked at him and I said, "Dude, I'm just going to apologize to you right now. If they hit you, I'll charge. Okay? Like I am so sorry."
There's kind of a gentleman's agreement on the team.
Yeah, like I did not mean for that to happen. Like that was not my intention. I mean, honestly, I wish I could have seen the video now because everybody tells me what I did and I didn't really mean to do it. So they're like, "That was just so, it was dirty the way that you did." I'm like, "I didn't mean to. I really didn't." But when I came up to bat the next time, I was standing on deck, and I turned around and looked at him. I said, "So, do y'all think I'm about to get hit?" And they're like, "Yeah, you're probably about to get hit." I said, "Okay, all right. I'll go up there, and I'll man up to it." You know, with him, on the other hand, if we broke it down, like MLB Network did a great job of breaking down, which here's how crazy it sounds. Mm-hmm. You and I can sit here, and there can be a – for you, say there's a vote that's coming up in a Senate or something along those lines, mm-hmm. and you can break down what every single senator votes and why you think he voted that way. Like, and that could take up 3 hours of a show of,
all right, certainly could. Yeah.
Let's break up, you know, let's now discuss the senators from California. Like, you could go something along those lines.
There's 100 senators. That could take all day.
Okay. MLB Network broke down his run from first base to second base. 90 feet, okay? Here's the thing. I don't blame him on 95% of the slide, okay? Mm-hmm. Because when you do watch him, the way the play was working out, he was at first base. The batter actually put down a bunt, okay? Now, if anybody has ever played MLB The Show, like I do almost every single night, you know sometimes you get greedy, all right? You've got a guy on first base. The bunt comes back. Your guy picks him up. You go, I think I make it to second. Now, turn around and looking at the runner's standpoint. The runner looked to his left. He saw the bunt get down. He saw the pitcher spinning around to throw to second base. Mm-hmm. When he saw that, his head turned straight for the back. From that moment on, he never again looked at the pitcher, looked at the other runners or anything. His mind was straight focused on the back. Reason being, he thought that the Red Sox were going to try to turn two because that's how Brock Holt set up. When you go to turn two, the shortstop will set up with both feet straddling the bag so that when the ball comes to him, he can catch, glide his right foot across, and throw. So in a really quick motion. That's all that the runner saw, was just that the way that he was set up. When he began his slide, that is when Brock Holt turned it into a force play and turned into a first baseman trying to catch the throw. That being said, I don't blame him for trying to take out Brock Holt. 95% of what he did was fine. It was the part where his cleats were up.
Right.
That was the bad part.
That was really the difference, because if his cleats are down,
yeah,
even if he winds up hitting him,
or if he goes with the front of his foot, he's trying to, you know, just
the contact isn't the issue. It's the way the contact happens.
Like if he's trying to go Karate Kid and sweep the leg, like just make sure the top of your foot is what gets him, not the cleat. he went cleats up.
Mm-hmm.
He went cleats up.
And that was
the problem. That is the problem.
And another thing, too, and this was part of the observation by the guys that were doing the play calling, according to the new rules, that should have been a double play.
Yes.
So the Red Sox are not only ticked that he spiked their player,
yeah,
but they also got a bad call,
yeah,
on top of it.
Yes.
And so you can imagine that's why tensions were high.
Oh, well, absolutely. And
even though this game, I mean, yeah, they were very much in command of the game at this point.
Oh, yeah.
But either way.
Well, again, remember, there was a point in this ballgame where this ballgame became very, very close,
mm-hmm,
because it was a blowout, and then the Red Sox came back. It ended up being final score was 10-6. But then J.D. Martinez hit the grand slam at one point in time when the Red Sox were down 8-2, made it 8-6, and with the fight, with the grand slam, Fenway Park was just going crazy. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were going. It was like it was a playoff game. And for us, for you and I, here's what we see every single day. Okay, what's going on TV? Oh God, it's Yankees Red Sox again. Are you serious? Okay, fine. I'll watch Yankees Red Sox. Blah 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 blah. For people in Boston and in New York, it's exactly like we feel whenever we're having a football game in November and they turn on the TV. He's like, oh, what game's going to be on CBS? God, Lay, it's Alabama-Auburn. Are you serious? God, I'm tired of seeing this football game.
Mm-hmm.
Because majority of the time, there was a period of time for the Iron Bowl between, we'll say, 2002 and 2008, where most people didn't care.
Right.
About the Iron Bowl.
You have to keep in mind that the Iron Bowl having national repercussions every single year is a new phenomenon.
Yes. It wasn't until 2009 it meant something, because 2009 had the drive. Alabama was one or two in the country. They were getting ready to play Florida again in the SEC championship. If they would have lost, and it would have totally screwed up the entire thing. Like, that was a big play.
Mm-hmm.
Then you turn around and have 2010, and then you have the comeback. Those two games back to back skyrocketed the Iron Bowl in national attention. Between what happened through 1999, from 1999 to 2004, this Red Sox rivalry with the Yankees just became huge. I mean,
oh, yeah.
National.
I remember.
Look, it was just like if you live in the state of Alabama, and we joke about when you move in here, you've got to declare. Jay Rio over on our sister station, Y102, like him and I had a ceremony on Sports Radio 740. Jay, who do you declare as your team? Like we did it all like that, because you have to declare. When that series between Yankees and Red Sox was at its highest, it was almost like that around the country. Do you like Yankees? Do you like Red Sox? Well, you see my beard right now. I'm not a Yankee guy.
No,
it's,
me either.
I'm not. Yankees are clean cut. They want to make sure that everything is nice and pretty. They have rules on facial hair. They have rules on how long your hair can be, all that sort of stuff.
Well, you know why I hate them? They feel like the Alabama of Major League Baseball. That's why I hate them.
And here's what's bad. Is right now the Yankees are a more popular team around the nation than what the Red Sox are, because they're doing it the right way finally. They've actually have homegrown talent. Gary Sanchez came up through the minor league system. You have Aaron Judge came up through the minor league system. Didi Gregorius, people forget, and I try to mention this as much as possible. He was Derek Jeter's replacement, which is just crazy enough as it sounds to have to replace the captain, and he's doing a great job. I mean, they are built on young talent. Giancarlo Stanton just fell in their lap. I mean, he did. He just fell right in their lap. But that's the way this series has grown. But until last night, from about 2009 until now, nobody really cared about Red Sox Yankees. It kind of just had its die. It died down nationally until last night.
Right. The rivalry has been reignited, and we're going to talk about some of the fallout of
that. Oh, look at you with the pun.
When we come back.
Tactics with Caleb Colquitt. Every weekday from 9 to 11, only on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Tactics on News Radio 1440. And NewsRadio1440.com. Got another segment with Upon Further Review, Joe Hunk from Sports Radio 740.
Have you seen the close-up of Joe Kelly during that fight?
I don't think I've seen the close-up. I've seen the fight, though.
I've just determined that Joe Kelly is the new Ricky Wild Thing Vaughn.
Really?
look at the way that he looks. Look at it right here. I'm showing it to you, obviously. And I'll retweet it at Joe Hunk. But look at that. He's got the glasses on. He's like, all right,
oh, man,
on.
He does look like it.
He's like, come on, let's go. Let's do it.
I did love that. He was like, Come on.
Okay.
Because Joe Kelly had to have known that
the whole team knew.
Yeah.
The whole team knew. If they say this was something that was not planned, no, it was planned. Because I remember in college, and again, this is in college with a bunch of kids. I remember, I want to say it was Delta State. Because I hate Delta State. We hate Delta State at UA Huntsville. And I want to say it was Delta State. And we were playing, and Delta State was ranked. We were just outside the top 25. And it was a very, let's just say, important baseball game. And one of our best players got hit. And then they did, like, a hard tag on him at second base. And, I mean, like, there was two or three things. And so our catcher, who was our team leader, he got everybody up in the dugout. And because we kind of retaliated on the same way in the next inning, when they came back in, we were coming up to bat, and we looked, and he got everybody together, and he said, all right. He says, when he comes up to bat again, if he gets hit, we're going out. He's like,
yep,
we're going out. This is how it's happening. And we're like, all right, cool. So when he went up to bat, every single player, coaches and all, were right up on the dugout
steps.
They
were already standing
at the tap. At the top, they were like, all right, what's going to happen? And you could see the umpire, like, looking, because he noticed that everybody was up on the dugout, and he noticed that everybody was up on the dugout on the other side.
And they cleared the benches twice in this game.
Yeah.
And the bullpen came in and everything.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Every player was there.
So what happened is when they're in the dugout, they knew that this was going to happen. Mm-hmm. Somebody looked at Joe Kelly, and I can't say, okay, truth be told on this, before I missed the slide itself, okay? I missed the slide itself because, don't know if you know, I'm a huge hockey fan, and the NHL playoffs are on.
Right.
And Ben from our sister station, I-92, is a Winnipeg Jets fan. And they were playing the Minnesota Wild last night. He texted me as I was watching this game, and he said, dude, you've got to turn it over. It's late in the third period. It's a tie game. This is awesome hockey. And I was like, okay, it's 8-6 in the fifth. No big deal or whatever, and I'll turn over. So I turned over. The game ended. I turned back right when the ball hit him in the back. I was like, okay, cool. Game's over. Click. Oh, this is awesome. I was over there like, you know, Hercules. Like, I was all excited.
It's like when you're switching between, if this were the equivalent of a TV drama or something like that, this is like in Gotham, like, you switch over and you see Bruce taking on Ra's al Ghul.
Yes.
Like, that's the
oh, my God. This is
what
happening.
What is
this
happening?
He's in the cave. It's actually happening. They're fighting.
Right.
Okay. So as this is all taking place, I don't know, and I personally do not know just yet, if Joe Kelly had just been brought into the game. I don't know anything like that. Mm-hmm. But most likely, either the catcher, if he had just been brought into the game, the catcher went up to him and said, you know what to do. Or if he was in the dugout in between the inning, he looked at his guys and said, y'all know who's coming up second. Y'all know, I mean, you know, he said something along those lines. So it was discussed. It was predetermined that this was going to happen. And on the other side of the dugout, same thing was happening. He goes, guys, if they throw at me, I'm going at it. I'm going out. And they're like, all right, we got your back. That's how it is. So it's the whole team thing. This was 100% planned. You had, if we're talking war here, you had one team planning their offensive maneuver. You had the other team planning on the retaliation. They were both doing it at the same time, and we all knew that it was going to happen.
And the thing is, and some people that don't know the inside sports area of this happens in every single sport.
Oh,
now, there's
absolutely
different versions of it.
Oh, absolutely.
Because obviously you don't charge the mound on a football team, but like my old roommate, he played for Auburn, and he says, if anybody goes after anybody's knees, the entire team targets that guy the next play.
Absolutely. I mean, 100%.
You don't go after a guy's knees, and in baseball, you do not spike a guy.
Oh, no, absolutely. And so with the fact that, you broke that rule, everybody knew what was it, and it was just amplified because it was Red Sox-Yankees, because there's always tension. Just like it is around here, that's the reason why I compare it to the Iron Bowl. Up until 2009, 2010, people really didn't care about the Iron Bowl. Like, it wasn't that big of a deal.
It always matters here, but that's not on the national scale.
Not on the national scale. When I woke up this morning and I looked at my cell phone, and the very first headline I saw on Twitter was, Yankees Red Sox are finally back. I went, yep, this is now a big deal. this is a 100% big deal.
That is the spark that lit the fire.
100%. And so this team, it's always going to be it's going to be this way for the rest of 2018 whenever these two teams play.
Well, they are going to meet each other 17 more times this season. I'm looking forward to every single one.
Heck yeah, they are.
Thanks for being with us, Joe. We got the Chaplain's Report up next.
All right, man.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
Galatians 5, 13, and 14. For you were called to freedom, brethren. Only do not turn your freedom into an opportunity for the flesh, but through love serve one another. For the whole law is fulfilled in one word, in the statement, you shall love your neighbor as yourself.
Welcome back. You are listening to Tactics on News Radio 1440 and the News Radio 1440 app. 860-1440 are the numbers. We do have the Chaplain's Report on, and by the way, we are trying to get everything back up and running. We think we've got it mostly solved when it comes to the podcast. And, of course, one of the things that I podcast every single day whenever the technology is cooperating with me, that is I do try to put the Chaplain's Report up. So if you ever want to share any of these with your friends, talk to them about it. I do see this as the most important part of my show every single day. So be sure to check us out on Facebook and Twitter at Tactics Radio or facebook.com/Tactics Radio. You can check us out there, and we post those hopefully every single day. We've had some technical difficulties, but we think we've got them resolved now. And so if you ever want to rehash any of these, you want to listen to it, maybe you need a little spiritual pick-me-up, we hope that we are able to provide that for you. Now, that being said, we are going to go ahead and jump into the chaplain's report. Proverbs 28, verse 9. And there's just so much wisdom contained within the Proverbs. He who turns away his ear from listening to the law, even his prayer is an abomination. In a sense, there is some reciprocity that is being presented here to explain the way God views us, the way God sees us, and the way that we are supposed to follow God's law, the expectations that God has for us. And he's saying, for those of us who do turn away our ears from listening to the law, in other words, those who are not interested in hearing what God has to say, that even his prayer is going to be an abomination. Now, to a modern reader, that might sound really strange, because why would anyone pray if they're not interested in the law of God? Well, there's a couple things. First of all, culturally, especially when you're considering the Jewish people, the people of the Jewish faith, they had prayers that they would say, but that didn't necessarily mean that they were listening to or following the law of God. That they may not have necessarily had an interest in it, that they may have prayed because it was culturally acceptable. Just like, unfortunately, there are people in our society today that only do things like pray, like go to church, because it's something they've done their entire life, and it's habit, and it's the culture that surrounds them, and so they do it really more to appease others than to appease God. And so we're seeing that this was something that was a problem and has always been a problem within the ranks of God's people. So this is somebody who is not necessarily an atheist, not somebody who doesn't believe in God, because if that were the case, they wouldn't be praying. But still, Solomon is saying that there are people, even if they believe in God, that are turning away their ears from hearing the law. Now, it is important to remember, and I think that context helps with this, that in Hebrew, the word hear does imply taking to heart as well. So when it says, for example, God has heard your prayers, that doesn't just mean that, well, God's heard them. That means that God is about to act on them, that God is about to do something about them. And the same is true for when God is talking about humans. When he says, for example, hear Israel these words, he's not just saying, listen to them. He's saying, listen to them, take them to heart, and act based on what I'm about to tell you. So in Hebrew, the word hear implies some kind of action, some kind of heeding of the law of God. So it's important to keep that in mind. So when it says someone who is not hearing the law, that could also be understood to when you're not listening, it just means even if you know the law, if you're actually hearing the commandments, but you're not doing them, you're not applying them to your life, then you might as well not be hearing them at all. You might as well not even know they exist. And one thing that it does show in this passage is that no prayer or worship is acceptable for those who ignore the law. And this is something we hear a lot in our modern society. People will say, well, I'm spiritual, but I'm not religious. Or I'm spiritual, but I don't really read the Bible, and I don't really pay attention to that. Well, what God is saying here in Proverbs is that even your prayers, if that is you, is an abomination. Now, there are some people that I think are well-intended by that, but if by saying that you're spiritual but not religious, what you're actually saying is, I'm not somebody that reads the Bible regularly or changes my life based upon that, which is unfortunately what a lot of those people mean, that they're not really into the rules and regulations that God has put forward in His law in the New Testament. Well, then God is saying even your prayers are an abomination, if that is what describes you. So it's important to define exactly what we mean by that. If by that they mean they do not heed God's command, that is not something that God is going to accept. Because think about it this way. Even demons are spiritual. Demons are spiritual creatures. They're aware of God. They're aware of His presence. They know who He is. They believe in the supernatural. They are spiritual. That does not make them good. Spirituality alone is not enough to be found within God's favor. And that's something that we need to be honest about. And here's another thing that I want to ask. Would a prayer from such a person, somebody that openly flaunts God's law and turns away from Him, is that something that would be appropriate to hear in a prayer anyway? Would that be somebody whose prayer would be accepted? Obviously, Proverbs says no, but would that be a prayer worth hearing anyway, even if God did listen to those prayers, even if those prayers weren't an abomination? The law instructs our spirits in every matter, and that includes prayer. It includes worship and other things too, but it includes prayer. And so understanding the law of God and understanding Him and His personality through His word will improve our prayer life and thus make our prayers worth hearing. You see, God's favor and promises are free, and they're inexhaustible, but there are conditions to them. Stay the course, friends.
Tactics with Caleb Colquitt. Every weekday from 9 to 11, only on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com.